Every so often, a podcast emerges from the clutter that speaks to the heart and soul of America and the world. This ain't one of them. It's time for those ignorant intellectuals.
Miss J.
Either learn me or I'm a left.
D.A.
Plain devil's advocate.
Pretty smoke.
I'm the type of woman you'll never have me in a position where I'm ass out.
J.L. Dangerous.
They don't really want the smoke.
And the moderator, Big C the Chef. They are the Unprivileged as Fuck Podcast.
You niggas, crazy.
What is going on, good people? Huh? What is going on? How y'all feeling today?
Happy Wednesday.
Well, we got, we did it. We did it. We got a new president. No more president elect. New VP, which is serving a number of firsts. And yeah, so I mean, we're gonna get into it today. But if everything is going off, I know the first thing he did was he sat down at that desk and had like 17 things that he was finna undo with Trump's, you know, that he was signing in, you know. So, but anyway, what's going on with y'all? How was y'all week?
Oh man, it's all good this week.
Just all good. Nobody did anything.
No. Nah, it was a really, it's been low key. I did do something. What am I talking about? So on Monday, on MLK Day, I went and I was, this is the first time I've done this since the pandemic. I joined with the Urban League. I sit on a board for an organization. And so we got with the Urban League. We're passing out food, you know, food boxes and all those things to cars. And we had over 1,000 vehicles show. It was everybody. It was all types of people. It was in North St. Louis in Florissant, matter of fact, in North County. And there was lots of people. Like, the cars just kept coming and kept coming. They give out some good things, but it also made me kind of feel a certain way, you know, like, you'd be amazed, because some people are like, oh, look at this person. They got a Mercedes, they have an Audi. I'm like, no, you don't know these people's circumstances, because they may have had that vehicle prior to this pandemic. Their people would not get paid. You know, I mean, there were Blacks, there were white, there were Asians, you name it. It was like all type of people. And you know, it was at Jamestown Mall. So it was over there deep in North St. Louis. And so just to see like that many people coming, you know, there may be people taking advantage of it. I ain't here to judge, but I know there are people who really are in need right now. So it warmed my soul to see that the good work that the Urban League of St. Louis was doing for those people. So I did that on Monday.
That's cool.
Good. Well, right. You know, for me, we got a Trump supporter directly across the street from us. Old head Trump supporter. So since the 6th of January, I just been surveilling him. And I've been just staying out, watching him, monitoring him, just being nosy, and have an FBI on the ready, on the dial. I already got a quick dial. So if they do something false, I'm just right there, boom. FBI, here's one of your guys.
So was he not there on the 6th?
Well, he was. He's an old head.
No, he's talking about in D.C. Six. Was he not in D.C. on the 6th?
No,
well,
I'm saying, was he not at home on the 6th?
I'm still trying to remember. Because on the 6th is when it started going down, and that's when I started getting observant. And so I'm going through all the film that they keep showing to see if I recognize. He's about 67. So he ain't too mobile. He probably one of them that just root from afar, but he's definitely a hardcore supporter. So I've been surveilling his house ever since. Ready. And watching the news and watching video clips on Facebook, Twitter, seeing if I could recognize the client.
Already.
I will snitch.
Hey, we gotta get them all.
11.
Well, hey, if something
like
go down,
yeah, they like Pokemon. We gotta catch them all.
The good thing about him at self IDing is that when something go down, we know who to slap first.
All right. What's going on with you, Christy?
Oh, right? My God. Good? Everything is good. I'm hanging in there, y'all. I'm doing two jobs and being a teacher over here. So you tell me, I'm
barely. I can't let you do that. Boy, y'all be killing me when y'all be talking about I'm homeschooling, I'm a teacher. No, you're not. No, you are not. You are managing your child.
No, I'm teaching them. No, I'm teaching them.
You don't want to be with that. No, you're
I'm teaching. Listen, some people may not be teaching. Some of them might be rooting from the sidelines, but this one right here, I got to teach him. Okay. I gotta watch it.
You know, then again, you are in Texas, so y'all, they give away teacher certificates in Texas.
See, there you go. There you go, Hayden.
You hold your ground, black woman.
You better know it. Strong. Listen.
That's right. Stay over there in janky ass East St. Louis.
Anyway, D.A., how's Jack your Fruit. Weekend?
What's up, Jack Fruit?
Oh, my bad, Jack Fruit.
What's going on, y'all?
Got a different name every week.
Oh man, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I just same old working man, just trying to maintain, you know, trying to figure out how I can get some of this unemployment, this federal unemployment, how many hours I gotta work, you know, just doing my math problem here.
Trying to figure out
what
on that line.
Yeah.
That's all. I don't, you know, that's all I got going. Nothing much at all.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Do you have any BS for us today?
You know what? Yeah, man. You know what? I'm really annoyed with this younger generation. I just, you know, notice how come you can't talk to anybody under the age of 30 without them playing with their phone? This has been really something that's really been bothering me. You know, when I'm sitting up trying to have a conversation with somebody, and somebody's just sitting there, you know, talking to me. Yeah. Yeah, looking down. Yeah, because I know they're not really listening to me. They're doing whatever they need to do, and I just, you know, I would just appreciate if they would just tell me you don't want to talk to me. You know what I'm saying is not important. Let's not just keep this right up like you actually care what I have to say, or you know, I may be telling you some jewels or something, man. But it doesn't even matter. I'm really perturbed with it right now, man. I mean, it happened to me about three times to the point where, like I said, I actually went mute for a couple of days. It pissed me off so bad, man.
You know, you're right, though, D.A. I agree with you. It's something else trying to deal with these jokers at that age. You know, they don't want to listen. Even if you listening to them, they won't even listen to you back when it's your turn. They pick up the phone and start texting. I'm with you.
Yeah,
I mean, just you, just an old dude, and like you don't understand how they can multitask, and you can't. This generation,
no such multitasking is a great lie. There's no such thing as multitasking.
Okay, but they were born into having devices and all that. Like, get with the 21st century. Just admit that. Like, they're able to do those things and still fully engage and listen to you.
No, they're not. But they're not.
You just an old dude, and you don't realize it.
No, but they're not.
Well, in my professional opinion, meaning certified by my own thoughts, is I think some of them are just nervous and a lack of confidence. Meaning, just like 20 years ago, before there were cell phones, you had men or women, mainly men. They didn't look you in the eye when you talked. They look away. They look down. That's a nervous. They lack in confidence. So it might not necessarily be disrespect. It could be that they not you when you're talking to them. They could just be lacking confidence.
Yeah, social skills too. But I mean, I think it's partially too because it's just become a norm. You know, everybody's face is glued to their phone now. I mean, and there actually should be more practices among, you know, within families or groups to put your phone down. I know I have a friend whose group, what they do is when, you know, when they all get together and go to dinner, everybody put their phone on the table. Everybody stacked their phone in the center of the table. And the first person to grab their phone, they got to pay for dinner for everybody. You know, so far everybody going Dutch. But if somebody grabbed their phone, first person to grab their phone, you got to pay for the whole table.
Oh, wow.
We tried to do that here. And, after the first comment I made, they told me to pick my phone up and pay attention to that. Sometimes it's not a good thing. They want to hear my thoughts.
Okay.
Certified by his thoughts. His opinion.
All right.
Well, you know, one other quick thing. I did find something that actually, you know, that actually sit there and would make changes. They got a cell phone blocker I'm about to pick up, man. You know, I buy little toys and stuff like that. A signal blocker. That'll sit there and basically block a signal. It's not a larger, it's only like 25 yards, but that's enough. If I like, you know, the question is it portable? Because as long as I can sit there and plug it in the car or something, I mean, it would just, you know, that, I think that, you know, when I'm having conversations, it would work wonders.
Just got hit to that thing.
25 yards though, man.
When I was in the classroom, I really entertained getting one of those signal blockers because, you know, just to keep my students off the phone. But then that kind of went away because they were like, it like impeded on their some right or another. I was like, whatever.
Right. No, you're right. It's to pay attention while you're in this class.
The other problem with it was if I bought it, it would shut my signal down too. So I was like, yeah, no, I didn't want to do that.
For me, that's not a problem. No,
But I did need mine as a teacher for many, many reasons. I was communicated with through email. If I had to make an emergency phone call, someone's trying to reach me today. So I still needed people to have access to me too. So
that's why teachers got laptops.
I don't walk around. I'm a teacher who gets up and move around pretty dynamic, so I don't walk around with a laptop in my hand. So that wouldn't work.
You know what? Hey, as Chris will attest, I don't answer my phone normally. I got three of them, so I mean, I just sit there, man. It wouldn't bother me a bit. You know what? Really, phones are really digital handcuffs. But we'll talk about that. That's another conversation.
We know you know about handcuffs.
Hey, my record don't.
Exactly.
Yeah, aren't too much.
All right. Well, thank you for that, D. Janelle.
Yes.
Do you have an unpopular opinion for us today?
I do. Look, don't at me, y'all. Just don't at me. But okay, so look. When you know it comes up on my timeline, everybody be having a birthday, and that's great. And I try to like say happy birthday to folks when I can. I miss them and I know people understand that. But this is what like just burns me up. If you over the age of 20, I ain't even gonna say 21, I got a problem with anybody doing it, but I'm gonna let them young folks have it. But if you over 20, we don't wanna know your Cash App. That's begging. Just like, come on. It's my birthday. I mean, you 49 years old talking about your birthday. You know, if all my friends send me a dollar, like, stop it. Like, seriously, you are begging. And then some people are like, well, the pandemic. No, this is before the pandemic. People been begging on Cash App. Like, they put their cash. Did I ask for your cash? I didn't ask for it. So I don't want to know it. And the funny thing about it is like none of their friends, I don't think, asked for it because we knew it was your birthday because you've been advertising your birthday all month long. You've been saying I'm open for, you know, dinners, lunches, gifts, and all of that. You've been doing it all month long. Ain't nobody hit your Cash App, but to that point, stop it. Like, that is just, I don't know. Like, I think that's classless. But that's just me. I think it's bogus.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of feel a certain type of way about that, too. You know, I mean, come on. I can understand that. Well, you know,
it has its merit. You know, I think Chris, you probably remember this. It was about, a year or two ago. I left my wallet at home. So I needed lunch. And so I asked, you know, could anybody send me some money for lunch? And I ended up getting like $714, right? Now, the problem.
See, Janelle, there it is right there.
The problem wasn't that I appreciate everybody that reached out that wanted to help me out. But what the problem was is I had to give all that money back. I didn't have to, but you know, if you sent me $5, I didn't need it. I wanted to send it back because the last thing I want to do is owe all these people. So it really took me 2-3 days to go through a list of people to make sure I gave everybody their fives, ones, the twos and fews back. And that's what it was like. I said, that's why I'll never do it. Yeah. I don't care if I did something. I just suffer.
But see, D.A., you one of those popular people, like I said.
Yeah.
You one of those people that know everybody in your friends list, you know.
That's true.
Man. But everybody don't know everybody in their friends list. But the average person don't know everybody in their friends list. And so they put that out there because, you know, there will be times where people – may put out a request like what you did, because yours wasn't for a birthday request. You were just asking somebody to cover you for lunch for that day.
Right.
But, you know, and I get that. But putting it out for your birthday, yeah, that's kind of juvenile. It's kind of juvenile, and actually, it's kind of tasteless.
Yeah, I just think that's just what it is. I believe that we're at an age where we can just give a gift, and if we want to give a gift, but, you know, my thing is this, you real good and grown, do you really need a gift? Do you really need a gift?
Yeah.
And I know that that's kind of mean to say, but I think that after a certain amount of time, you should be okay, and you should pretty much have what you want.
Exactly.
Well, y'all done just blew my high, so I'm scratching that off the list for my birthday. Okay. I was trying to get one of them self-automatic lawnmowers that you just put outside. Well, guess I got to go get it.
Mm-mm. Yeah. All right, so today we have a special guest.
Yes, we special do. Guest
joining us, and I will let Janelle go ahead and bring them in.
All right, so look, luckily we are fortunate to have with us today two special guests. The first one, Aaron Ashford, he has a whole lot of alphabets behind his name. I'm not about to get into all the alphabets, okay? It's just a lot of alphabets behind his name. After a comma, then there's a period, then another comma, and a dot, whatever. But one thing I do know about him, he's a licensed therapist, he's a life coach, he's an author, he specializes in mental health and well-being, particularly in those of Black men and boys, but basically anybody with a brain. And then we have another distinguished guest who happens to be his wife, and she's not just his wife. We have Tamala Morrell Ashford. She is a principal of a middle school, and she's been in education since 1998. She's been on both sides. She's been a teacher, and she's also been an administrator. And so during these trying times, we want to talk about some things that affect us, that affect, you know, parents at home with their kids, that affect couples and relationships, that affect us not being able to get out and do the things we want to do. And just want to get some stuff off our chest. And we want to talk to these two people who are experts in their field about those types of things. And if you have questions for us, you can put them in our live. We'll ask those questions. But we got some questions on this panel. Like, I know for a fact, Chris got questions. But before we get started, Aaron, tell us a little about yourself and a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go down to Tamala.
Welcome, brother.
First of all, yes, welcome. Welcome, Michael.
First of all, thank you for having me. And before I get into all that, I mean, I just want to tag on that comment that you had about how tacky it is to solicit funds for your birthday via Cash App, because that's something I post on Facebook, and it kind of grinds my gears every time I see it. I'm like you, like, we all work. You do you on your birthday. But anyway, so I'm glad to be here. Like you shared, I mean, my background is mental health. I've been in this field since 95, you know, even back when I was in undergrad at the South Carolina State University. And so that's what I do every day. And it's something I actually live. So I'm one of those people that get up every day and I'm actually excited about what I do, regardless of what's going on. So just seeing a lot of trends that impact our community in particular. I love talking about it. So I'm grateful for having the opportunity to hopefully lend something to this discussion today.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Just like Aaron, I went to South Carolina State University, which was represented well today by Representative by Jim Clyburn. We met in college. I majored in education. So this is my 23rd year in education. I was a teacher for about 9 years and then went into administration. So I've had the privilege of being a principal of a very large middle school for the last 5 years. So education has been a part of me probably longer than anything else. So I love what I do, even through the struggles of what we are experiencing right now with the pandemic.
All right. So now you are dealing with mental. So you deal with mental health issues, right? Correct. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what kind of a have you had to deal with anyone who has like been really going through any things with I know you can't disclose any information about them, but can you have you been dealing with a lot of people so far that the pandemic has been really trying? Yeah. Have you witnessed a lot of I guess, distress with a lot of people?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that one of the things that that COVID-19 has like really brought to light was what I feel are like a lot of underlying mental health issues. It's just that folk were too busy before the pandemic to really stop and then focus on the fact that they were stressed and having very poor coping habits. And so then we get in the midst of this pandemic and life as we know it comes to a screeching halt, right? And I remember doing a podcast April, and I was telling people a lot of the word I don't hear going around enough is grief, right? Because everybody's experiencing grief in some way, shape, or form. And so, you know, a lot of people hear grief and we automatically attach that to death and dying. And so certainly with 400,000 people dying, it has been that too, but it's been grief on a small scale. It's been that person who whose routine has been interrupted, right? And so then you have these people who, if I'm an introverted person, I'm doing just fine with the shutdown, right? If you're an extroverted person like myself, you've experienced some hardships throughout this this pandemic. And so I think that a lot of what I've seen is just, you know, people having, basically being forced to kind of deal with that. So it's kind of presenting in one way, shape or form, either through your marriage, performance with work, or just somebody just really saying, you know what, I'm not okay. And, you know, that's a lot of what I've been seeing. So I work with children as young as 5 on up. So that's a very wide range of like ages and developmental levels and things of that nature. So I've seen struggle up and down, you know, that range. So it's not just hitting like, you know, small kids are struggling, you know, adolescents are struggling, young adults are struggling, as well as even older adults. Mm-hmm. You know, I could think of my mom, I'll pick on her, even though logically, you know, she loves Thanksgiving. Like, that's her deal. She has all her kids, her grandkids, and she loves to cook. So this Thanksgiving, you know, she was talking to me. She's like, you know, it's the first time since y'all been alive that we're not getting together for Thanksgiving, right? So logically, she knew why. It still didn't take away the fact that she was left with some hurt feelings and disappointment about the fact that something very important to her has been taken away. So it's just, like I said, a lot of issues like that. So a lot of extreme issues. It's caused some folk to get hospitalized. It's had some folk on the brink of being hospitalized, as a folk on the brink of being divorced, flunking out of school, you name it. So I've seen like all of that.
Did you happen to see or observe an increase in the people who were frontline workers? More so than just, you know, those that are, all of us, of course, are being affected. But when you're out there, you're not getting hazard pay, you feel like you're risking your life. Did you see it? Were you able to kind of pull the numbers, so to speak, on how many people you saw in that instance?
Actually, now that you mention it, for me personally, I haven't seen an uptick in that population, right? And what it tells me is that a lot of times as people who are caregivers, we do a horrible job of then taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think that sadly, if that trend continues, you are going to see those people become like casualties of their field. I mean, you kind of see things in the news like nurses just quitting. I remember that, the young lady on Facebook just feeling so stressed out that you quit, because like there's not a lot that's built in to insulate that. I'm just gonna be perfectly honest with you. Most jobs, I'm gonna pick on corporate America for a minute. Most jobs do a horrible job of taking care of their frontline, their essential people. So if you're not a person that has the wherewithal to be proactive about your mental health, you're just going to be kind of caught in that cycle. Maybe you get some help through EAP to get 3 to 5 sessions, or maybe you just suffer in silence and you just kind of stay busy. I haven't ironically seen a lot of those people like you think you would.
Yeah, I definitely would think you would.
Hmm. So Tamla, being a principal at a middle school, no less, like what are some, a couple recommendations you have for parents? Because we have parents on this panel. I think everybody's a parent on this panel, and not that anybody on this panel said this, but I've heard this before, where parents are like, you know, they don't have nothing to do at home. They're home and this school ain't doing their job and my kids ain't got nothing to do and they stupid and these kids is being schooled and blah, blah, blah. Like, what are some recommendations for parents who are feeling frustrated by the educational system right now?
Well, I know I've heard before, people have said it, parents are the kids' first teachers. So I know when the pandemic first hit, some people went way to the extreme and they were writing out lists. And my kids are still going to wake up at 7:30 a.m. and then they're going to do this and then they're going to. But you still have to realize our kids are still adjusting and trying to figure out what's going on as well. So you can't go too far to the extreme. They still need time to be kids. But number one recommendation is to definitely have a schedule in place. Give them time to make sure they're in class, to give them time to make sure they have, you know, even with our kids being kids at my school are half-time virtual, half-time in person. And we still have a block of about an hour and a half during the day in which if the kids are in school, they get lunch, they have some personalized learning time. The kids who are home get a chance to kind of log off and just take a break. So you still want to give the kids a chance to have a break so they can jump back in and then make sure there is some structured time for homework or review. And then sometimes they just kind of decompress. They need that time in the evening, in the afternoon, because hours and hours and hours on the screen and then hours and hours trying to, you know, figure out what we were doing and make sure I'm caught up is tough on the kids. So a schedule, but a reasonable schedule, number one. Number two, a dedicated learning environment if the child is home. Aaron and I talk about this all the time. I don't want to see you in the room, in your bed, on your laptop. You got to come out of your space and have a nice distraction-free learning environment. I can't tell you how many times I've done classroom observations and I can hear when the child unmutes to provide an answer, the TV is going, mom is on the phone, we even had a student one time and say, can I be excused? And we were like, yes, what you need, baby? I have to walk the dog, so I'll be back in 10 minutes. I need parents to understand that time, they are still in school, even if they're not in school. So let's make sure we have a good schedule in place. Let's make sure we have a nice, dedicated, distraction-free learning environment. Those would be my top two. And then number three, always take some time to just kind of talk to the kids. Our little one loves to talk about his day. And sometimes I have heard so much that I don't want to hear anything. I need some quiet time, but I don't want him to feel like he doesn't have a chance to, you know, just kind of come down from his day. So just some time to still talk and connect as a family. So those would be my top three recommendations for parents and kids right now.
So let me ask you guys this, you know, when you think about children, I mean, especially during this pandemic, you know, I'm sure that they're, you know, experiencing a lot of different things from anxiety, you know, fear, maybe fear of dying. And then they don't have the social structure or the environment with their friends, you know, I mean, they don't have basically the support that they may need from. So, I mean, besides what you just outlined, basically, you know, having talked to your kids and what else can you do to kind of bring? Because it's, you know, a lot of my friends with children have a hard time or having a hard time because they don't know, you know, since we don't know what's going on really.
Right.
They don't know what to tell their children. So, I mean, what can we do to kind of calm the children down, I guess, to at least make it more normal for them?
And even like I was saying earlier, just to have that time to have those conversations. So we have a 7-year-old and he is very well aware of COVID. And if anybody walks around, he's like, hold on, let me get my mask. I mean, he is like over the top with it. But he was having some trouble sleeping at night and coming in our room. And he told me, he was like, mom, I just keep having dreams that the little COVID balls are chasing me. I mean, so this is a 7-year-old trying to process this because they hear this. So I often tell my faculty, I know social media, we got the TV on CNN all the time, but you have to have a break from that as well, because even if it's just in the background, it is permeating your psyche and the kids. So we are very aware of how much of that is on the TV. That we've been home for a couple of hours, TV has yet to come on. because that he's processing and dealing with all of that. So just to have an opportunity to talk about it, to explain it. And he says it, I hate COVID and, you know, it's bad. And I'm like, yes, it is. But we have things that we have to do to make sure we stay safe. So it's difficult because we don't know how to process it. I had a meeting with my faculty the other day where I just gave them an opportunity to just talk. Just let's talk. No agenda. And they talked about it coming into the building. I'm nervous, you know, this, that, and the other. So if the adults are having that type of anxiety, you know, the kids are. So just wanted to give them a safe space to talk about it. Same thing with the kids and just help them to understand we might not have all the answers, but I am here for you. I will also say, like what Aaron said, I told my faculty that we have access to counseling. The insurance pays for it. So make sure they're taking advantage of that. It also covers their family. So if they have children that they feel are struggling, they need to take advantage of those counseling sessions. Because just, sometimes it has to go a little bit deeper than what I can say to my child.
And, I would add to that, as a parent, it's okay to not have the answers, right? I know that as a dad, as a guy, like I pride myself with having solutions for problems, right? There are just some problems we just don't have a solution for. It's okay to say that. And I think a lot of parents, the fact that they won't admit that puts them in a really unrealistic situation that they're going to come up with this like magic cure. We're going to snap our fingers and things are going to go back to being normal. Things are not going to be normal, right? We're embracing a new normal and that's okay. So, but I think giving kids just the opportunity to kids and adults to just process your day. How are you feeling? Right? Highlights as well as lowlights. And we're able to talk about that. And I think that's cool. But even bigger than that, it just brings me back to something that I see even in my field. Like I said, just the mental health, you know, in our community, the fact that we don't embrace mental health, the fact that we embrace a mindset for the most part that we feel that if we aren't suffering, it's not normal. Right. And that's the craziest thing in the world. Like there are no medals. Right. You know, I got these medals for running a couple 5Ks. Right. There's no medal worth having for suffering. And so there's help out here. And in most cases, people have the resources and they don't take advantage of them, you know. So that's kind of one of the things that really frustrates me the most. So as a parent, the best thing you can do with your child is to get your child some help, you know, whether that's going to their pediatrician. Kind of identifying the fact that, you know, my son or daughter is dealing with some anxiety. I really do get excited when I see these children today. I could talk a lot of crap about this generation, right? Technology and all of that, but they show a great deal of resilience in asking for therapy. I mean, these kids are smart. I just saw a girl today, 16 years old, same age as my daughter, asked her mom, I want to talk to a therapist. And I'm thinking like, that's great. And so while every kid's not going to be able to form those words, I think as parents, we have to be okay with the fact that like it's our job to do whatever it takes to get our kid the help that they need. And sometimes they need to hear from a different set of lips than ours, and that doesn't make us less than. It just makes us, you know, willing to do what it takes to get them what they need.
So can I piggyback on that, Aaron, about help and young people asking for it? So, you know, prior to the pandemic and kids being at home all the time, secluded on a tablet or you know, whatever, they have to work on a laptop. You know, when kids were really like that, you kind of like, oh, you know, that's a little strange. You know, they're not very social. You thought maybe something's wrong. So how do you identify in times like this, if something's going on with your kid, because, you know, you don't know if they're withdrawn because they pretty much got to be on the laptop. As Tamla mentioned earlier, her daughter was on the laptop late at night, you know, the night working, but she was legitimately working on homework. But, you know, any other times, like, why is your kid on the computer all day and into the night? That's a sign that some may not be right. They cooking up bombs, you don't know. Like, so how do you get these warning signs now?
Sure. Warning signs are going to manifest in a number of different ways, right? Call me crazy, but I'm of the thinking that the best approach is a direct approach, right? I remember one time my daughter was 13, so I'd taken her to her pediatrician. And so they give like a questionnaire. And so she's sitting right beside me, and you know what I do for a living. And I'm looking at this questionnaire. It's like a, you know, a questionnaire about anxiety and depression. I know all the questions. So like, I'm thinking at that moment, like it never dawned on me to ask my daughter if you ever felt anxious or depressed before, right? Think about the hypocrisy in this. But I'm kind of looking to see how she's going to score these answers or whatever the case may be, but just ask them. That's the best place to start. Ask them, you know, how are you feeling? Right? That's a good place to start. And then know that there are people trained to interpret behavior a little bit different. We don't want to wait until our kid is like getting into some harming behaviors where it's like now it's like they've skipped all the way to like an inpatient hospitalization or something like that. Because, I mean, but even changes in behavior. Are they sleeping more? Are they isolated more than normal? Has the mood been elevated in either way, right? Just like basic things like that. And I know that with the pandemic, a lot of the basic structure is out of whack. And so kids are needing to sleep more like vampires. But even in that, just checking in with them, you know, even with adults, if I could be very transparent. When the lockdown first started, I was golden. I was like, man, I get to binge watch these Netflix shows and, you know what I'm saying? Eat some good food because like I work hard. I'm like, okay, this time off, 2 weeks, I was okay, 3 weeks. And at the end of 3 weeks, I went through like a period. I was just like, man, I'm just not myself. I'm not even shaving my head on a regular basis. You know what I'm saying? I got a bald head. So just like little things like that. And I'm an adult who works in the field. So just imagine what these kids are going through and they can't necessarily articulate what it is that they're dealing with. But I mean, I think everything starts with a conversation, you know, just asking them that or even going, you know, like I said, pediatrician well visits, et cetera. A lot of little screening tools online. I mean, and that can be hit or miss. I will warn about it. It could be hit or miss because I could be fine today, but 2 weeks ago, yeah, I felt down in the dumps. So, but just generally having that conversation, keeping that dialogue going.
So let me ask you this. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was wondering, so what do you do when the parents themselves won't, you know, get help? Because a lot of times inside our community, a lot of us are, you know, how can I say it, are self-medicated. You know, and you know, knowing that alcohol is like a psychoactive thing, you know, especially when you, you know, you mix that with the alcohol, you know, the isolation, and you probably have a problem yourself. How do you, I mean, with knowing that the parents are going through this, how do we get the message? I mean, I guess you got to get the message to the whole household.
You can make recommendations. I'm a firm believer that you can say most anything as long as you use some tact, right? Because you know and I know, nobody in our community wants to hear, you need some help, right? You know, those are fighting words. You say that, and it's like, you know, they're going to the state board, you know, trying to get my license revoked and everything. So, but just in a roundabout way, just kind of tying in the fact that, you know, making mental health normal. I think that's kind of what we need to do. Mental health should be normal. It's okay to talk to somebody. So I'm one of those people, I believe in like self-disclosing, you know? Before the pandemic, I said, you know what? How can I always tell my clients that everybody needs a therapist, right? And I'm always telling them like, you know, you need a doctor, everybody needs a dentist, everybody needs a therapist, right? You don't want to wait until you're sick to go get a doctor, right? And the doctor said, man, if you came to see me 6 months ago, we could have found that tumor, you could have lived or whatever the case may be. So if we're proactive about these things, that's good. And so then on the other hand, I was like, why don't I have a therapist? Right? So I was feeling like a hypocrite. So I went into 2020 and I started seeing a therapist. And I feel like, you know, that's something I share with clients. I want to normalize that. You know, it shouldn't be something that's looked at as like, why would a therapist see a therapist? I had people ask me that before. And I said, well, you know, I hope my doctor sees a doctor, right? My doctor can't get himself a checkup. My dentist can't feel their tooth, right? And so you got to really think about things and take out the parts that might make something weird and just really want to normalize something. So like I said, just kind of being tactful. I paint the picture and I tell parents like, hey, your child has some things they're working on. You got some things you could benefit from working on. And like, you put all this together and the dynamics in that family can improve drastically. So, and I don't have a problem referring them out. Like, so it could be two different people. Like you go see somebody else and I'll work with the child, that type of thing. So.
Tamla, do you see an increase more so now with the kids since they're homeschooling and the assertiveness, the attentiveness, even some of the opposites of those things, like the anxiety? Because let's be real, being at home with your parents is stressful as hell, right? It's real stressful. And it's not only stressful for for the parent and the kid, it makes for the environment, the vibe, the whole vibe in the house can be off at times. So are you seeing that?
We have seen that. And I know we've talked with our teachers a lot about how to pick up on signs. We have lots of resources at the school. And one of the things that we really pride ourselves in at my school is relationships. That's a big part of our vision. So reaching out to the kids, talking to the kids, just kind of getting to know them and letting them get to know us. But I've had kids to reach out and say, I'm struggling, mom, this, that, and the other is going on. I'm about to leave this house. And so we're able to kind of point them in the right direction with counselors, with our social worker. But we do see it. We do see it. Like Aaron was saying, everybody's home. We had to quarantine for a while. And, the first couple of days of that first week, we were cool. Everybody was kind of do their thing. But that second week, it was tough. This house felt like it was this big with all five of us in here. So just imagine that house. You got someone who's working from home, kids doing school from home. And it gets tough. So our kids do share some things with us. I think that's really good. Some don't, but some do. And those that do, we are able to provide some assistance. I try to send out a weekly or biweekly message to the parents. And we do have something in there where the district provides counseling or outlets where you can just come and talk. But we have seen it. We've had kids who the nurse, anytime we have severe situations, they alert me. We've had kids who have, been cutting. We've had kids who, have said some things that sounded like they were going to harm themselves and they had to leave the school by way of ambulance. We've had families that have had to go into our family intervention services, which provides counseling to kind of help them talk through things. So we definitely have seen an increase in that. So that's kind of hard. We've had kids who've lost parents,
right?
Who've lost family members, and they're trying to process that. We had a student who lost a sibling and found out while she was in class. So just trying to make sure we have things in place to kind of help meet their need. But it has definitely been an uptick in that.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It's been, as a parent in corporate America and trying to be an entrepreneur, all of those things that come into play, it's difficult. And being a single parent, sometimes I find it quite difficult. The first couple of weeks, it was cool. We can bond together, but I still felt like I needed to go outside. I was considered an essential worker. So, but then I was afraid. Because now I got to go out and then I got to come back. So, it was a lot of emotional stress. Being in corporate America, it was a good thing that I'd worked for a great company. They offered those extra perks for the essential workers. They didn't pay us hazard pay, but they did provide that extra layer of support if we needed that, flexibility if we needed that. And I can see that, and I don't know, my son was in a Plano school district, which is a very good, great school district, to now where he goes to school in the Cedar Hill district, which is an urban area, right? And so the level of support that the schools were giving, I felt like didn't really reach the capacity that it really needed to. And so, there was a lot of conversations that needed to be had, especially if your kid is in a program, if they're in a learn, if they have a learning disability, you know, there was, I just feel like that extra stress came from the schools not offering the support that they needed to offer for those kids who may have those issues. So it was just a lot, and, you know, it was grace and God first, you know, but now we're kind of on a more steady pace. But I am seeing that he's not getting that education the way he would if he was in that environment, in the school environment. I can't provide that for him no matter what I do. So, you know, there's another layer of stress.
True. And that is, I don't know about you all, we went home on a Friday. It was a Thursday. Friday was a holiday. And the governor made a call on Sunday evening. So our teachers had literally no time to plan and prepare. No time. Right. Kids didn't even have time to come get their jackets out of their lockers. I mean, it was just like that.
Yeah.
So the teachers came to work a couple of days, put some things together, but we didn't know what we were doing.
Right.
So putting together packets that, you know, kids aren't going to do packets in your face, so they're not going to do them at home. Mm-hmm. I will say we did use some time, the time from the end of the year, from that point to the end of the year and this summer, to definitely get some PD going and to really kind of restructure. So our social workers, our counselors, you know, everybody kind of learned, had to relearn their role in this new era. So things are much better now than they were when we first started in March. We've learned a lot. So I do feel like we've been able to meet a lot of needs. But yeah, a lot of the frustration came from that. Kids who needed services, who came to school because they knew they were going to get a meal. This wasn't happening all of a sudden. This wasn't happening. So it's been a journey.
Definitely.
So Aaron, and Tamara just kind of hit on this because Christy kind of prompted it as well. But, you know, what would be your recommendation for parents, like, who insist on calling their kids during the school day when there's a trauma, like when there's a death? I can speak on this because I'm not allow you to. And Tamara, you can join in, because I'm sure you've had those experiences. What would be a recommendation for parents when grandma passes, or, you know, their dad just got shot and is in the hospital? What are your recommendations from while that child is in school? What should parents do when they get that information?
Like, while the child is in school?
Correct. Tamara knows what I'm talking about. So you tell me. What they should do. What do you think as a therapist parents should do with that information?
In terms of conveying it to the child?
Correct.
Wait till they get home? I mean, that would be.
And why should they?
Because I mean, like, you never, I mean, like, that's very, like, volatile information. Like, what's this kid supposed to do with that? And in a academic environment. So sometimes, and grief is a very, like, personal, private thing. I wouldn't want to have to deal with some news like that in a school environment. I would prefer to not deal with it at all. But if I had to, I could wait until I get home to kind of like process it a little bit differently. So,
would you like to speak on that?
I mean, if you have to, I would at least wait until you get to the school and pick them up, and then, you know.
And
then tell them, don't call them on their phone and say, hey, grandma died. No.
Yeah, what am I doing with that?
What are they supposed to do with that?
And they do that. We've had kids, they get a phone call on their cell phone, or we have to go find them because they've gotten this information. We've had people come to the school and they want to tell them, and I'm like, you can sign them out. You're going to have to eventually. But yeah, it's because the child is just, their mind is not there. And so even with, we had a situation where a student was in class online, and they found out the information while the child was online. So everybody in the class heard what happened and saw the child break down online. Mm. And so just imagine the teacher having to deal with the other students who witnessed this. So it's hard. Of course, we want to try to make sure there's a time and a place for everything. I'm very emotional. So you don't want to tell me, you're going to need to take me and drive me down the street, because that's just the type of person that I am. And we need to think about that with our kids. Sometimes people don't. They just pick up that phone, even with their children, and they give this information and they don't handle it well. So.
You know what I would say is, for a good example of why you shouldn't do that, look at the video of George W. Bush when he was reading the book to the students and when his advisors came and told him what just happened at 9/11. The look on his face, he was like, what am I supposed to do with that now? Why don't you just pull me out of this meeting?
And he turned the book upside down. The book upside down, like not read. Yeah. He was gone after that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so yeah, I mean, yeah, it's best to just go pick him up. Don't send him a text. Mm-hmm. Don't send him a text.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. I feel like that is such a cop out for the parent. You know what I mean? It's, I don't want to deal with this at this moment. Let me let you deal with it, and then I can kind of handle it a little bit better when you get home. It's so unfair to the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, I've had cases where I've had to share news. I can even remember we had a death in the family, and like picking my daughter up once we were driving away from school to kind of talk about that, because I mean at that point it's like it's just the two of us, you know what I'm saying? So obviously this is, it's not going to get much better, but school wouldn't be something I would think to send her a text. Like, oh, by the way, I think that's, in my personal opinion, pretty a crappy thing to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say if you're going to send a text, you need to come home now.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it. You know, tell the school I'm on my way to pick you up or whatever, yada, yada. But you need to come home now. You know, don't say nothing else.
Right.
So. Agreed.
Well, all right. We want to thank you guys for joining us this evening. Some very, very good information. How can people get in contact with you if they want to reach out to either one of you?
I'm on Facebook, friends with Janelle. If somebody had a counseling related question, they could like reach me through my website. That's www.transcendence-now.com.
We'll share your information.
Yeah. On our page. But I mean, if they just needed to ask a question or something like that, I mean, I don't mind doing things like that, because at the end of the day, I want people to get the help that they need. So the good news is that the access to mental health therapy is at an all-time high. It's never been this easy to access. And so I give COVID some credit for that. That's one of the good things that have come as a result of it, and I hope that doesn't change once things do get back to normal. But I mean, a number of platforms to be able to access it, so I would just recommend that people take advantage of it.
So, question for you: even though you're based in Columbia, South Carolina, mm-hmm. now that insurance companies are approving virtual visits, mm-hmm. can someone in New York City who is vibing with you, can they connect with you and get a referral for you?
Yep. If they're interested at that website that you're going to provide to them, it knows my schedule better than I do. So a person can actually go and, book an appointment through the website. So
I had one question for the Ashfords. Thank y'all for the information that y'all provide. This is excellent. But my question is, it deals with this new administration that's coming in and seeing one of the best parts, in my opinion, is that they're going to bring a new education secretary. And for Ms. Ashford, do you think that it will help with the education side of things? And then for Mr. Ashford, they're going to have another emphasis on the mental health of these young kids, especially during this pandemic.
I can say I see that the superintendent and deputy superintendent, both educators, you know, unlike previous administration, that just left.
Didn't have a college degree.
Yeah. So these people have been in the schools, have worked in the schools. They know schools. They know what we need. So I'm super excited about that. I think that's going to bring a lot of change. As we spoke earlier, there are certain things that we're still waiting on, like waivers to whether we should be testing. So a non-educator wouldn't understand what we're going through when it comes to the pandemic and the validity of tests, even with this type of with the pandemic going on, but someone who's been in education would understand that a bit better. So I think that is going to really bring about a change in education, and just kind of to put the focus on where it needs to be. The public education far outweighs private school education. And it seems like we were trying to funnel all these funds into private school education and just say, it is what it is, a public school education. So I'm excited. I feel like that change is going to happen with this new administration.
Good, good, good. As far as I go, like, I'm one of those people, with regards to like politics and understanding policies like the Affordable Care Act, that I got extremely excited about, that actually provided more people to actually get health insurance. So I'm excited that obviously this new administration is going to continue that and then better it in the ways that it needs to become better in. And so with that, I would love to see, and Tamla and I have talked about this like so many years. We'd always had these debates about, kind of like chicken and the egg. And I'm still of the opinion that public education and mental health need to get together and kind of like hook up. Because I mean, a lot of stuff that goes on with these kids, and I noticed from like years of working intimately with these kids, a lot of these kids have some serious issues going on from an emotional and mental health standpoint. And then that affects their, not only their academics, but behavior in the school. And so if you're in the school, she talks about it all the time, having to deal with things from a discipline standpoint, that's taken away and detracting from the quality of education. So I would love to see that get together and be a lot more robust in terms of meeting these kids' needs from, really K through 12 is yeah, early as you see that. So
fingers crossed. But how would you get through to the kids? Because, you have a lot of these parents are, don't you be talking about what's going on in my house and to them people at that school. You don't tell them what's going on in here. How do you get past that wall?
Yeah, that is a concern, man. I heard some, like a couple of years ago, New York State was like the first state to actually emphasize mental health as a part of their educational system, right? Which I think is an awesome thing. So a lot of it can start from just a standpoint of, and I know this sounds funny, teaching kids about self-esteem, right? We can do that without going into a private, deep, tell me about, your innermost secrets types of thing, because these kids just don't know. And then they get to middle school, right? Mm-hmm. And they start to enter into adolescence, which is the most difficult stage of development that we've all been through. Rush of hormones, they don't know who they are from day to day. And so everybody's struggling with self-esteem and everybody's insecure about something, and you got all of these things going on. But we can start at an early age, again, K through 12, just talking about self-esteem, how it's important about how you feel about yourself, mm-hmm, and not what these other people say. Because I mean, now we know the bullying of today is not the bullying that I endured back in the 80s, right? It's about physical intimidation that had me wanting to hurry up and get dressed in PE before the thugs came into the locker room, right? So, but now it's that intimidation through like emotion, like just, if I don't like this person, they feel bad about themselves. I mean, so I think little things like that, and just even rolling out like different groups to really target things like anger management. I know school counselors do this thing to a degree, but really kind of dealing with things like conflict resolution. I mean, I could think of just some really core areas that if we started being proactive in weaving into education, I mean, we could really save ourselves a lot of heartache by the time these kids get to like middle and high school. So,
and I will say, we have a campaign we call is See Something, Say Something. So the kids are going to talk to somebody. So a lot of their friends will come and say, hey, listen, my friend so-and-so, don't tell her I told you, but she's going through this, that, and the other. So a lot of the kids do come to the adults and advocate for their friends. And we're able to have those conversations. But yes, there are still some kids. I can think of a girl right now, and we know she needs help, but her mom has told her, under no uncertain terms are you to talk to that guidance counselor. And you better not tell that administrator anything. But we have to, we can't ignore some of the signs. If we see signs, we have to act on that. But the kids, like I said earlier, once they really get to know you and get comfortable with you, they will share. So it's sad. We've had to have kids be EPC'd from the school, and then the parents come looking for the kids. But we have to do what's in the best interest of the kid at that time. So sometimes they will open up Our counselors are always there. Their friends talk to them and they'll let us know. It's tough, and we do see it a lot more. And well, I can't say that. I was about to say we see it a lot more in our community, but that's not necessarily the case. They don't want their business out there either. So it's just about having avenues for them to be able to come and have that conversation and have a safe space. So we try to provide that for all of our students.
Okay. Thank you for that information, because that is very important. And also, you know, it's important that we let everybody know, you know, help is always available. There are counselors that you can call. You know, we thank the Ashfords for being available and willing. But for those people who, you know, just want to remain anonymous, and you know, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Service, we're going to post that number. I have it up. Just know that there's somebody out there that will listen to you. Those people who tune in all over the world, we want you to know that, you know, we care. There are people out here that will listen and are available to talk to you.
Absolutely.
All right. Again, thank you for joining us this evening. And we appreciate all the information that you sent, that you've given us this evening. And again, if anybody needs to get with one of them, we'll have our information on our page. And this is a subject that we need to really, really, that more and more people really need to push, is mental health. You know, people, it's been such a taboo issue in the Black community for so long. You know, and I'm glad to see you got like people like Charlamagne pushing it. You got what's her name? Cookie Empire.
Taraji.
Taraji. You know, she has a foundation that she's using to push the statue, you know, the issue of mental health. You know, so there are more and more people coming out about it, and you know, and they're trying to push it to the Black community. And this, I think this may be something we may get into, is push it more within the Black community, because
absolutely.
I ain't gonna lie, we got some messed up people in our community. You know,
we're gonna have to see Aaron again. We got a resident therapist.
Everything else is virtual right now. We can take advantage of all avenues.
Right. So yeah, again, thank you for joining us. And we would definitely love to have you back on the show at another time. All right.
Yes. Y'all keep up the good work.
Thank you all for joining us. Appreciate it.
Be best.
So thank you everybody who joined us tonight. And that's gonna do it for us. We appreciate everybody who joined us. We appreciate everybody who made comments within the chat. And again, remember, when the new administration, come on, let's try and do better and follow the rules now, as if we haven't already, but let's just try and do our part. And so we can have a summer this year, please. Can we? You know,
I want a hot girl summer.
I'm definitely not trying to spend the summer cooped up in the house again this year. So let's, you know, I'm thoroughly thinking about going to get a vaccine. If I had, you know, I'm thinking I may go ahead and get it, because, you know, if all the white people get it,
Marie does not speak for the panel.
Let me get that microphone in
for the panel.
It's going to defeat the purpose. You know, we'll see. But I'm thinking.
Social distance. Wear your mask. Wash your hands.
Right. I haven't gotten anything yet. So, and I'm praying that I don't get anything, you know. So, and I pray that you all.
And don't be getting all attracted to somebody because their ass look good. Not that I heard that before from somebody earlier today. Don't get to talk to somebody just because they ass.
You still got to use common sense. You still got to use common sense now.
Yeah, because you know what? I done seen some creatures with pretty eyes.
Oh.
Hey, we know, we all know some dudes that fell in love for less. We all got a brother too.
All right. Again, if you got any topics for us, topic ideas or comments, email us at unprivilegedaf@yahoo.com. Follow us on YouTube and Instagram, and follow our Facebook page. Also, please, if you follow us on Facebook, go to and follow and subscribe to our YouTube channel, because with, I guess within about the next 2 weeks, we got about two more episodes that we'll do here on Facebook. We will be moving our lives to YouTube. So if you want to continue following us, if you want to continue to, you know, listen to the podcast live when we go live, follow us on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, because that's where we'll be going live from in about the next 2 weeks. Okay. So until next week, stay safe. Wash your hands, wear your mask, social distance, all that good stuff. Be safe out there. We'll holler at you.